Welcome in to another edition of The Current Report, our weekly roundup of what's happening in the world of digital media. I'm your host, Chris Brooklier. It's easy to say that we're living in a data-filled world, as retail media, performance marketing, and addressable advertising take a bigger share of the market. But getting into the nitty-gritty of the quality of that data is critical. Is it consented first-party data? How quickly can it be reported back? All these details paint a much fuller picture on the practical and future ways advertisers can fully leverage being data-driven, which is exactly where a company like Attain comes in. Since being founded 5 years ago, Attain has over 7 million users sharing commerce data into its platform every day. In fact, Attain says it owns North America's largest opt-in consumer purchase platform, with more than $700 million coming in daily. So what better way to figure out how Attain has taken a different path to make a dent into the world of digital advertising than to talk with the company's CEO, Brian Mandelbaum. All right, pleased to be joined by Brian Mandelbaum. How's it going today? Here you're in Chicago. I used to live there, so a lot of love for that spot for sure.
It's been nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me. Chicago's been great. It's been super mild. It's been an incredibly warm winter here in Chicago, believe it or not.
All right. We love that. You guys have a ton of commerce data, but how do you get all of this?
Yeah, we sort of take an approach that the only way to get really good quality data is to source it from consumers directly through an informed opt-in consent. And we have a plurality of consumer applications. One is an app that a lot of people are familiar with. It's called Clover with a K. And then we have another consumer-facing app called Frisbee. And then we're building another one, hopefully, the back part of this year. But those apps really give consumers an opportunity to create a value exchange where we give them free financial services or rewards or access to new and innovative wage products. And we give that to them for free or a low cost. And we get their consent to use that data for the industries that we're talking about today, retail media, insights, measurement, all those good things. And we obviously give consumers extreme rights around privacy and the ability to opt out. So we bring that to market because we're sort of solving, you know, three core issues in the marketplace. One is, I believe, scarcity of data, just because of we're seeing around cookies and signal loss and what happens with regulation. We're also solving for skepticism around the data footprint, because that data that does exist, where is it coming from? Like, what's the provenance of that data? I like using the word provenance because it really talks about like the, I'll pick another heuristic, like the farm to table. Do you know the source of where the data is coming from? So that's the skepticism around it. And then last, it's the silos. So the people that do have data and do have the provenance, what do they do with that data? Will they typically wall it off and create sort of a non-interoperability of their data to be used exclusively for themselves inside of their proverbial four walls or their four walls?
If we pick up on the walled gardens, do you have any sense if, as we move away from cookies, if there's going to be more walled gardens in the future or fewer?
Oh, I am a big believer that with the absence of sort of universal identification, cookies and things like that, you're just going to find more fragmentation in the market, and there will, and walled gardens are here pretty much to stay for at least the foreseeable future. Anything could happen and things can change and new technologies can emerge, and we can't be here making crystal ball predictions. But I would tell you that walled gardens are something that advertisers and marketers are going to have to think about and around as they continue to invest in marketing, because it's not going away. It's only going to get stronger.
Gotcha. So if we back up, how does commerce data really fit into intermeasurement for advertisers?
I think that way that commerce data fits into measurement for advertisers is really focused around what is the ultimate outcome that a marketer or an advertiser is supposed to achieve. And if you really think about what the ultimate outcome for a marketer is, it's am I selling more? Am I growing my market share? Am I selling more total products to more people? Am I selling more products to the same household or individual, so I'm increasing my lifetime value of that user? or am I expanding into new markets and driving more outcomes and revenue from that output? When you look at all three of those sort of areas of the continuum of success, it all boils down to sales. And now we're at a place where sales data is available to marketers. If you think about what where our GDP is as a population in the U.S., $7 trillion GDP, only 15% of our GDP is really e-commerce, consumer spending. That's only $1 trillion or so. The other $6 trillion is really unaccounted for. And that happens offline. It doesn't happen on Shopify or on Amazon or Walmart.com or a host of other Etsy shops and eBay. It happens in the real world. And selling is really omnichannel. Doesn't matter if you're a restaurant or a QSR brand or you're a CPG company or you're a streaming service, like things happen in the real world too. And we bring to bear that other $6 trillion of data signal, which is basically the sale that happens on and offline, to the marketer so that they can make decisions in real time. A lot of the time, this data is not available, unless it's D2C, unless it's, you know, sort of e-commerce oriented, it's not available in real time. It's kept at the retailers, it's kept at the credit card companies. It's something that's provided, you know, 6 to 8 weeks after a campaign wraps up. And it's just, that's not the way to make media more performative.
Yeah, and that's something that I think is interesting about Attain, is you're sort of back-ending the system, right? So the way I think about it is like the retail and the retail data is really at the top, but it's, as you were saying, the retailers are owning all of this data, and you're sort of coming from the bottom to the top, where it's the people are giving their real-time data so that advertisers can action on that quicker.
I think you're really defining that correctly. It's retailers have an ocean of data, very valuable and impressive sets of data. We can't really argue or dispute that, but it is really inside of their walls. If you take a consumer-first approach, you have a wider aperture of understanding what their discretionary and consumer spending is, because you're starting, the vector starts with them. And the purchases happen across a array of retailers or sales environments, whether you're purchasing from McDonald's in store or you're purchasing from McDonald's through a delivery app like DoorDash or Uber Eats. The only way to really understand that at the consumer level is via the consumer.
So then if we project into the future, where do we think that just the overall sort of marketplace of retail data is going to be in terms of like, how much of a stake will it really have in terms of marketers' minds? Like what priority will it have, you know, sort of as we go forward?
If you think about retail data and retail media as sort of like a stack rank of investment from a marketer standpoint, I think it's high up, but it isn't the only thing that marketers care about. I will be remiss to say that brand marketing still prevails from a market for driving markets and driving brand perception. Like you have to invest in all areas of your marketing funnel or marketing stack in order to drive superior outcomes. But it's important for marketers to really understand, is what they're doing at the upper part of the funnel, the things that they're doing in, you know, television or connected television, driving lower funnel capabilities as well. Doesn't have to be the most efficient, is it driving ultimate outcomes? And can you get visibility to see, okay, these brand-based campaigns or things that we're doing to build our brand, are they driving to the lower funnel? And I think that's where we surface that data as a company at Attain. And I think that marketers can now understand that in real time and make adjustments and investments to understand if that's going to be more or less accretive to the marketers. That's how kind of we think of it. But I have to say, brand marketing will always exist. And the other part to understand is, in retail media, is all retail media the same? Well, I would argue it's not, because a dollar spent with one retailer, you don't know the impact if that dollar spent with one retailer is actually helping an outcome at another retailer. Because retail media is still media. You know, whether you're exposed to an ad on one retailer's platform, you may not purchase in that retailer's platform. You may purchase couple days later on another retailer. That happens. But it's very hard for marketers to understand that if the data is siloed in a place where they don't have the wider lens to understand, does one impact the other?
All right. Well, I think that's a good way to end it. I feel smarter after this. So thanks, Brian. Good chatting with you.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Next, we're capping off this episode with one last thing. The rise of women's sports cannot be understated, especially after seeing the big ratings number that came during the Women's Basketball National Championship. Disney's ad revenue doubled from last year, with ad space for the Final Four and title games sold out. And Ally Financial poured in twice the amount of money into advertising during the women's tourney compared to the men's. Overall, women's sports are projected to generate more than $1 billion in ad revenue this year for the first time ever, a staggering 300% increase from just 3 years ago. And with all the stars across women's sports, that number is only likely to keep climbing. And that's it for this edition of The Current Report. For a deeper dive on all these stories plus more, check out thecurrent.com. And of course, please like and subscribe on YouTube, plus leave us a review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen. And if you want to hear more from The Current, listen to The Current Podcast, where we interview some of marketing's biggest leaders about their keystone career moments and where the industry is going next. We'll see you next week.